So there we go. I think the tape is rolling.
Hello, I'm Simon Mercep. This is Crave, the podcast dedicated to music, to film, theatre, television, just about anything that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
And this week we have a bit of an odd mix. On the one hand, we've got a couple of films that fit very neatly into the blockbuster run of franchise offshoots that seem to be clogging up every cinema in the land these days. We've got the second Deadpool movie and just think of a number, whatever number you think of, double it. So that's probably where we're up to in the Star Wars films these days. This one's called Solo. Might be the only standalone Han Solo film. There might be spin-offs from the spin-offs. I mean, who knows? Who knows?
And who cares? I can hear that lingering in your voice. Who cares?
It's there, isn't it? Just a smoke, but it's there.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, now, it's not perhaps so surprising we're going to talk about a couple of, as Steve says, big blockbuster franchises like that. But here's where we do go a little bit off-piste, as it were, this week, because we've got a rock band headlined by the former Guns N' Roses drummer Steven Adler. Okay, that's not perhaps so unusual, is it? But the warm-up act here was not another band, but rather a sit-down question-and-answer session with Adler and his mum. Steve will tell us all about it shortly. I can't wait, Steve.
It was odd. It was very, very odd.
Sounds it. We'll also reflect on the second season of one of the most, I think it's fair to say, intense and grim dramas in many a year. This is the television adaptation of Margaret Atwood's novel, The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
you
even have to say it in that tone of voice, can't you? Don't you? You can't just say, "Oh, Handmaid's Tale." Yeah, so you have to say The Handmaid's Tale. That's how heavy it is.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely true. Now, that's not to say it's not good. It's fantastic, but it ain't light entertainment. Let's put it that way.
No, you'd watch Game of Thrones afterwards as a palate cleanser, wouldn't you? but all that is ahead of us. All that awaits. I think before we get started. First of all, Simon, welcome back.
Thank you.
Now, last time we spoke, you were significantly further north than you are right now, north of the Arctic Circle, if memory serves.
That's absolutely correct. Yes, I was in that little Norwegian town of Tromsø. That's as far north as I've been on the planet, Steve.
It's about as far north as you can get on the planet, really, isn't it?
You don't get too much further north. And I was been away for just over a couple of weeks. Had a quick visit to Sweden and Denmark, thrown in for good measure on the way back.
Be rude wouldn't it?
Yeah. I may revisit these travels a bit later in the podcast, time permitting. But let's get on to what we're all about, which is entertainment. And in particular, shall we start with a film?
Yes, let's.
Yes.
And I'm thinking that the film we'll start with tonight is Deadpool 2.
I think so.
Now you and I, Simon, I mean, generally speaking, I'm going to say that we both got absolutely impeccable taste in films, and being gentlemen of similar discernment and good taste, we tend to be fairly consistent in our views together, don't we? However, I think there might be a bit of division with Deadpool 2. I think you might have got it wrong here, mate.
Well, I did. I have to say, I did note, because I've read your review on our website, Steve. That's cravepodcast.com.
Nice
and
plug.
I think you basically said, don't bother. In fact, I think the phrase crushing letdown was written in that review.
You don't want to hold back, do you? I mean, you
know.
Speaks as one finds.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I have to say from my point of view, I actually enjoyed this film immensely. I had a really good time. I mean, it had laughs, action, foul language. What's not to like? Well, Mr. McCabe.
Well, where should we start?
Well, pick a topic. Let's pick about the whole idea of this film, which is it's almost an anti-superhero movie, isn't it? Because it's the first one particularly just took the mickey out of all these sort of movies, didn't it? And poked fun at it and said, well, in a way, how silly they were. I think this film is basically doing the same thing. Is that your problem? It's too much of the same.
No, it's not enough of the same is my problem with it. Paradoxically enough. Look, there's, well, we'll start with the way we often review films. We'll discuss the plot.
Yes, okay.
And the plot, as far as I can tell, is it starts off, and this is not a spoiler, Deadpool dies.
Yes.
Except that he doesn't really, because he can't die.
That's
right. Which is part of his thing. So he starts off, he experiences a crisis, mm-hmm. which we won't dwell on because that will be a spoiler. And from then he suddenly decides he wants to go off and help out a young lad at kind of like a boarding school for mutants.
Yeah.
And decides he wants to go and help him. Next thing you know, he and the young lad, this is Fire Fist, played by Julian Dennison.
Yes.
Famously a wilder person.
Indeed.
And next thing you know, the two of them are in superhero prison.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wearing these things around their necks that stop them from being superhero active, which basically means that he's not Deadpool anymore.
Correct.
He's Wade. In the meantime, you've got Cable, played by James Brolin, sort of bopping around. Josh Brolin, I beg your pardon, bopping around in the background. Yep. They get out of prison fairly early on. He then goes back to the X-Men mansion, does a few gags about X-Men, and then sets up his own X-Force. That fizzles out very, very quickly. And then he does the whole plot thing with Cable, and there's too much plot. There is far too much plot. It stops being about Deadpool. The first film was a film about Deadpool. It was an origin story of Deadpool. It mm-hmm. set him up, and everything was about what made him tick. And it was hysterically funny as a result. He got to do all his best things. He got to be filthy and funny, and it was wonderfully meta and deconstructive, and it was hysterically funny, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
This film was not a film about Deadpool. It was a film with Deadpool in it.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that, first of all, excellent summary of the plot, Mr. McCabe.
Which was a challenge, to be fair, because it was a mess of a plot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I took the view watching this that I didn't actually care that much about the plot. And that's an odd thing to say. I'm a little bit familiar with the Marvel world, and I do know that the Cable character is actually quite a not so much in the movies, but in the comic books has been quite a major character and a well-known time traveling sort of figure who goes about trying to correct faults in the timeline. So that I was broadly familiar with what that storyline was going to be all about. So I didn't get too caught up in that. I guess the thing was, it's the first film is this character is such a, as you use the word, a meta character who's sort of talking to the audience and poking fun at his own genre. Once you've done that, I don't know what you can't completely reinvent the wheel for a second film. I don't, because that's what the character is. So I kind of expected the second film to be of a similar take of the superhero world. And I think it broadly was. And I found the sight gags, the visual gags, were being fired at me as quickly as they were in the first one. In fact, there's so many of them. Sometimes I take a few notes, Steve, and I just gave up after a while. There was too much to write down. But some of the humor I thought was still funny. I thought there's a sequence where this newly assembled team that you referred to has to parachute out of a plane. I thought that was hilarious. It was gross but hilarious. It probably happened too soon in the movie. I think that was the but yeah, did you laugh during that? Did you find that amusing?
There were moments of genuine humor in it, and it was well cast as well. I thought, you know, Terry Crews popping up for basically little more than a cameo was really funny. And the one character who sort of like has any, what's what I'm looking for, he gets any traction in the whole thing, is Domino, played by Zazie Beetz.
Yeah.
And her superhero power is that she's lucky.
Yeah.
And they played that really, really well.
They did, yeah.
But again, it then becomes a film that's as much about her as it is about Deadpool. So if you want to make the X-Force film, then make the X-Force film. But don't call it Deadpool, because it's not about him anymore. He's in it.
Well, I think that the storyline about his, you mentioned the crisis with his wife, Marina Baccarin, I think he was still the main character, and the X-Force thing was a little bit of a light add-on, if you will. It didn't seem to be the most important part of the film. The driving part of the film was the story around Deadpool trying to protect Firefist, played by Julian Dennison, from Cable. But all the time you're thinking, well, is Cable really a bad guy, or is there something else we don't know? And the film eventually resolves that. Look, I think there were some things that didn't work. I kind of felt Julian Dennison, the young Kiwi lad, was a bit wasn't made of his talents. I thought
he was criminally underused.
Yeah, I felt a bit sort of sorry for him in a way. I didn't think I let him, but he had a few moments, some script lines, but it was it didn't allow his natural talent to shine. Put it that way, and I thought it felt like they were forcing him to use the F word, because every character in this movie does use the F word just about. Whereas I think it might have been funnier if he didn't.
Yeah. But, all they gave him to do basically was be pouty and grumpy and a bit sweary. And it kind of fell a bit flat. He's better than that.
I think I agree with you on that. I think he is, but I just found this, the meta aspect of the film, I still engaged with a lot. I still laughed a lot. I think some of the fight scenes in these movies, if you've seen them once or twice, they do drag on a lot, and you know what you're going to get. And I think that towards this last sort of section of the film, I was getting a little bit tired of that. But overall, if you're just looking for a bit of a rousing sort of belly laugh every now and then, and a film that will keep you guessing a little bit about what's next, which I still think Ryan Reynolds can do that.
Yeah.
Even if the character is well established, I enjoyed it. I did. So I don't know whether they play things around about other, as you said, the DC universe and other Marvel films. There's all these tongue-in-cheek in jokes going on left, right, and center. I suspect there's quite a few I missed.
Much going on in it. There must have been, yes.
Yeah, but so that's it, yeah. So I think I would recommend this film. I don't think, listening to you, Steve, that you would.
Well, you're kind of going some way toward persuading, I have to say, Simon. I'm thinking maybe if I didn't have such high expectations, if the first film hadn't been so good, I might have been a bit more willing to accept this. It was a decent film. It was nowhere near as good as the first. It was never going to be as good as the first. But it was still perfectly agreeable and entertaining for what it was.
Yeah, isn't that the thing with all second films? If a first film has really surprised you and given you a fresh take on something,
yeah,
it's a hell of a challenge to do a second film that somehow... you can't go back and make something fresh again. I think that's a hell of a challenge for any writer to do that. So
yeah.
there's always going to be a few aspects of these sort of a second time around, which I think will be really, really difficult. But I just was laughing enough that I didn't worry about it so much.
There is, if we're getting philosophical for a second here, if what you're saying is true, and I believe it is, that you can't just make the same film twice.
Yeah.
You have to do something new. And if the something new isn't going to be anything like as good because you can't just make it twice, then don't make it.
Yeah, yeah, all right.
But that's just not going to happen, is it? I think I'm not so naive as to imagine we'll go, oh no, we'll sacrifice the squillions of dollars. We'll make it
in
the interest of artistic integrity. That's not going to happen. They're going to make the film because they know it's going to make oodles and oodles of cash for them. But yeah. I would have rather seen him incorporated into... like a comedy version of Avengers, call it X-Force and have goofy characters in it.
Yeah.
And roll him into that. They've given him his, like they've done with all the others, they've given him his backstory, and now he can be part of a larger team. That's what they've done in the Marvel Universe. They could have done the same thing with him. I think try and make this budget as a Deadpool film, and that's where they lost me, I think.
All right. Well, we'll agree to disagree.
If you can be wrong if you want to, Simon.
Yeah, well, hey. I still think it's worth the price of a ticket.
It's not bad.
I'm not sure whether I would have spent money on an evening with a famous rock drummer, a reconstituted band, and the drummer's mother Would you care to pick up this little story of Mr. Adler, Steve McCabe?
Right. Now this is well on, isn't it? This is Simon Stephen Adler, who was the drummer in Guns N' Roses. Absolutely. Yeah. So back in when would it be? 1988. So 30 years ago, he was part of a band that released an absolutely groundbreaking album. Appetite for Destruction was something a little bit special.
Yeah.
I actually owned a copy of it on vinyl with the original offensive sleeve that got censored. I was there early on, and I was dead impressed with it. I thought it was a fantastic album. I still listen to it from time to time.
Okay.
And I had the great good fortune to see Guns N' Roses, which is basically Axl Rose and Slash on guitar, and then, what's his name? Duff McKagan on bass.
Yeah.
And a couple of others as well who were basically keeping the seats warm for the rest of the band. They played at Western Springs last year.
Right.
And now that was a good show. That was very, very good. But that was the whole that was the band basically. And in particular, it had the two key members of the band. It had Axl and it had Slash.
Yes.
Now, Stephen Adler was the drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Rare is the band that builds itself around its drummer. That doesn't happen often.
No, it does not.
No, it doesn't.
Even if you had a Keith Moon, the thing was you had a Roger Daltrey and a Pete Townsend there as well. So
exactly, yes. You can't really build a band around the drummer. He's got a mortgage to pay, I'm sure. He's certainly got enormous medical bills and rehab bills to pay off for the rest of his life.
Okay,
that's what shone through more than anything else. For the first, it's probably about half an hour. They were on stage. There was Adler and his mother Deanna, and then your man Bryce from radio station The Rock, who was giving him really really easy questions like, "Tell us, what was it like being in Guns N' Roses?" And I mean, I don't pretend to be the world's leading music journalist, but I think I could have found something a little bit more probing.
Yeah. Can I just check just before you go on interview?
Yeah.
Was this actually as a proper lead into the a show, and you had the audience all there? It sounds like it was something done for the media.
No, you're right. You got it right. It was at the power station in Auckland.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is how it was billed. So if you look at the photographs on at the cravepodcast.com website, you can see she's sitting in front of a Marshall amp stack.
Okay.
They've got like beanbaggy type things on the stage, and the two of them sat there, and your man Bryce is sitting on a stool next to them. And you got all the audience who were, frankly, some of them nearly as embarrassing as he was. And so he was being asked questions. She would attempt to answer questions that were pitched to her. He would just basically tell her to shut up and stop talking and be quiet.
Oh.
Which, get very, very sweary and quite inappropriate. And mumble and slur like he had a head injury recently. And it was not edifying at all. And he didn't really have a huge amount to offer. He basically said he's forgotten most of it because of all the drugs he'd taken.
Okay.
The stroke that his mother referred to probably accounts for the very, very challenging quality of his voice.
Right.
No, it was embarrassing. And the audience, every time he mentioned, say, like, for example, he talked about Led Zeppelin and paused, and so the woman standing just near me whooped and hollered and shouted, "Yeah, Led Zeppelin!" And, you know, made the devil horn signs with the fingers. And just all the way through, he would sort of say something like, "Yeah, that's rock and effing roll, man!" And then everyone would cheer because he said rock and roll and said the F word. And the whole thing was a bit cloyingly awkward.
Oh.
And I kind of wanted it to end.
Yes.
Deanna, 73 years old, she's apparently. Sorry, 76, I beg your pardon.
Right.
And you know, she's obviously, she even said, you know, she's very proud of her son. She loves her son, as any good Jewish mother would.
Yeah.
But you can tell he's been through a lot, and she's being supportive, I think, more than anything.
Yeah.
But I felt for her.
Yeah, I've just gone back to the website to have a look at your photos there, Steve. I can see her there. Yeah, they're both sitting down. They're both holding a microphone. And
yeah.
Yeah, it is odd. I mean, odd is a good word. That's, I mean, the only, I can recall last year, Steve, when Robbie Williams was here during his actual concert, not as a lead up to it. He actually brought his father on stage, but his dad actually sang a song. They sang a duet together, and they sang it quite well. It was an old fashioned song, and it went all right. But that wasn't a sit down chat. That was part of the musical show, and that was a bit corny, but it worked all right. This is something altogether different, I feel.
Yeah, it was. It was an interview, a Q&A, call it what you will, but it was intended to be a spoken voice segment. They needn't have bothered. It was I don't want to say he ever had any dignity to begin with, but what little he might have had did not survive. So finally they buggered off, and after a half an hour intermission, the band came on, and so again, Adler's Appetite. It's got Stephen Adler on drums.
Yes,
on drums.
Yes. Now, does he do vocals as well?
No. No, there's a chap named Constantine Maroulis, who was... Right. He came like sixth in American Idol or something like that several years ago.
Okay.
So he's a adequate singer. And, you know, there's the rest of a band. There's a chap named Michael Thomas, who's taking the part of Slash, playing lead guitar. And I mean, I'd be delighted if I could play that well, but I think there's a reason why Guns N' Roses played at Western Springs and these guys were at the Power Station.
It's aptly put, yes.
They were basically a second-rate Guns N' Roses tribute act. They were adequate. They were competent. And these are the best words I can find to say about them. Adler is a profoundly good drummer. He's still got that. I think the second song in, they started playing It's So Easy, which opens with a really nice drum line. And you can say, yeah, he's got the swagger and he's got the swing of it and he's got all of it. But the other guys, nah. They were... If they weren't playing for Adler, they'd be lucky to play the Power Station.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, I don't know if I need to ask any more about that. I should think that sums it up rather neatly. It actually, you know what, talking about members of bands that were famous in their day and are still trying to elongate their career, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't help but think, actually, as you were telling us about that, last year we went along to see Alice Cooper in Auckland, and the warm-up band, I'm not sure warm-up band's the right expression, was one fronted by the former Kiss guitarist Ace Frehley.
Yes.
Now, that's kind of, I'm thinking it's a bit similar. The band... was there to support him. He was the big name. He could still play guitar, just as Adler could still play drums, but he was meant to be the front man, and his voice was average at best, and he was, I thought, I was going to say mediocre. Well, he was mediocre, but he was going through the motions. He thought just by standing there and striking a pose, everyone was going to adore him.
Yes.
And it didn't. And you could sense it right through the audience. Where I was standing, don't want to exaggerate, that they weren't buying it.
Right.
They just weren't. He was a pompous, stuck-up chap thinking he was God's gift still, and while he could play guitar, he needed someone else to be the front person. And I, you know, it's just... Hearing you talk about Stephen Adler just brought that back to my mind.
A little bit of modesty and humility doesn't come naturally to a rock star, I accept.
No.
I get that. But when you have to puff and preen like that, it means that you're trading on past glories, doesn't it?
It does. It does. My abiding memory of the Frehley show was at one point they tried to get the audience to sing a lot, you know, join in with a chorus, and the other band members who were gesticulating wildly, "Come on, everyone, come on!" And they were waving their arms, and no one was joining in. It was quite embarrassing. Anyway,
that is awkward. That's very very awkward, isn't it? Yes.
Anyway, all right. So
I think we need to move on from that,
back,
don't
I'm
we?
I'm going to rush out and see Mr. Adler. Thank you, Stephen McCabe.
No, well, if I could, I was about to admit something terrible. I'm not going to say that. What I will tell you, though, is it was billed as being he's going to play Appetite for Destruction in its entirety, and he skipped a couple of songs.
Oh.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he'd forgotten about them.
Ooh.
I think it might be time for him to hang up the drumsticks.
Yes. I don't think I've got. I don't have an appetite for a ticket. I have to say.
Oh, very well played. Yes. No, you don't. I think basically he needs to let his mother go and make him a nice cup of tea, and he needs to have a sit down.
Okay. Good. Right. Thank you.
Moving swiftly onwards from that
yes.
Right then. So, I've been less than overwhelmed by Deadpool 2.
Yes.
I think I made my thoughts about Steven Adler reasonably clear.
I think you did.
So carrying on in that trend.
Yes.
Solo, a Star Wars.
A Star Wars story. That's right. Yes. Well. Yeah. What do we say? We say
yeah,
that.
There you go. There. It was like, a pause yeah. There. That was it. Yeah. That was your review there, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, okay. Before we get into this film, the whole Star Wars thing, I should say from the get-go, I haven't been a huge, huge Star Wars fan going back over all the films over all these years. I did think the one which reintroduced Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford, is that 3 or 4 years ago now, Steve?
The Force Awakens, yes.
Yeah, I enjoyed that very much, and I particularly enjoyed those old characters coming back. I thought Harrison Ford was great. Well, sorry when he got killed off. I didn't think last year's...
Hang on, I know 4 years ago. Was that a spoiler?
No, surely not.
No.
If it is, I apologize. Last year's The Last Jedi didn't achieve that same quality for me. It was all right, but... The Rogue One, which was another one of these spin-off Star Wars stories we saw a year or two ago, was a little different. It was a bit darker and grittier, and the ending was very dark.
Yes, yes.
The trailer for this film looked, though, as like a return to more sort of Saturday matinee sort of fare. That was my take on it from the trailer. And I think that's pretty much what it is. So I don't think this is a – what do you call it? This is a more of a popcorn-type Star Wars film.
Yeah.
Get starting. The story, what this is all about is giving us the backstory of Han Solo, and Chewbacca, how they get together, how they become friends. We're not going all the way back to Han's childhood, don't worry, but we are joining him as a young man. He's played here by Alden Ehrenreich.
Oh, yeah, I think that's about right, yeah.
Right. He's on a planet run by crime warlords. The planet's called Corellia, and we meet Han and his girlfriend Kira, played by Game of Thrones' Emilia Clarke, who are desperate to escape the planet and make a new life for themselves. We obviously shouldn't give too much away, but let's say that there is a bit of a separation early on between those two characters, but we do see Han meet Chewie, also meet a band of roving and untrustworthy thieves who are led by Woody Harrelson, who seems to be on every second movie these days. The band also includes Thandie Newton, so a couple of decent actors there. They happen to dally with the film's main bad guy, Dryden Voss, who's played by Paul Bettany. They also meet Lando Calrissian, of course, who was a character throughout the Star Wars movies, played here by Donald Glover. The other important thing we must mention is that we see how Han and Chewie get a hold of the Millennium Falcon, their famous spaceship. It's a backstory. It's a filling in a few gaps of how things happened later on. There's quite a lot of action. There's a bit of romance. There are a few twists and turns in the plot. But it's okay, but not top draw. That's what I've got to say.
I can't argue with you, mate. I think what you're saying there, Simon, is about right. It's perfectly agreeable stuff. You're right. It's got because it's They do actually point out at one point it's not Han, it's Han.
Yes, Han.
It's a very
Han,
very
yes.
American thing, that isn't it? It's Han Solo.
yes.
He was always meant to be a bit cocky and a bit of a cowboy, and there's a bit of swagger in him. And Ehrenreich, I think, channels that quite beautifully. He does a very good job of that. It's about right that this should be kind of a cowboy western type film. Mm. That should be the kind of the feel that they're injecting into it. And I think they do a good job with that. I think there's too much going on in it.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
And at the same time, not enough, paradoxically. There is a story
yes.
to do with, as you say, Harrelson's and Newton's little gang of thieves who get hooked up with Dryden Voss as Paul Bettany, and so there's that dynamic going on, and it just gets in the way of Han.
Yeah, that's true. He's. I mean, this is a film where the character is trying to prove himself. He's one of the overarching ambitions in this story is about how he wants to be a pilot. So we see his character. heading on that sort of mission, inner mission to satisfy himself and achieve that goal. Yeah, I think that there are, as with a lot of, you'd expect, a number of set pieces, action set pieces, Steve. They do one which appears in many movies, which is like a train-type heist.
Yes.
I actually enjoyed that quite a lot. It's not a new idea, but I quite liked the way that was put together, and I was got some genuine exciting sequences in that. I think that was in some ways one of my favorite action sequences of the whole film. Some of the others were a bit ho-hum, I thought. But
oddly, it told you very little really about the origin.
Oh, no, it didn't. Not at all.
It doesn't tell you anything about how Han became Han Solo.
No, it doesn't. Nope. I think one of the things I took away from this was you enjoyed Aaron Reich's acting. I took me a little while to warm up to him, but by the end I enjoyed him. I have to say, I don't think – I'm pausing because I don't want to upset anyone. I don't think Emilia Clarke was the right actor for this film.
You know, I am so torn about Emilia Clarke. I mean, on the one hand, I am a massive Game of Thrones fan, as I think you know.
Yes, and likewise, yeah.
And if you're a Game of Thrones fan, you are pretty much by default very much in love with Daenerys Targaryen.
Yeah.
It's hard not to be. But as that series has ground on, she has become very one-dimensional as an actress.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think that's fair. But I think the problem with this film is she's most of the time she's playing the role in a very I don't want to – we've got to be careful not to give too much away. But let's just say in the story there's some interesting twists and turns to her character. But she just comes across – whether that's the way it's written or the way she's decided to interpret it, it's all very she's a very effusive and nice most of the time and, you know, outwardly romantically interested in Han. But it's in a kind of a – candy floss sort of a way, and I just thought, oh, I'm not sure what I'm getting from this. It's almost going through the motions a little bit.
Yeah, which is sad when you look at the talent that she's alongside. Like Thandi Newton is brilliant, again, because she has a tendency to be rather brilliant.
Yeah.
Woody Harrelson, you know, he's like the acting equivalent of Bob Dylan.
Yeah, that's a very good.
As he gets older, his voice is just getting more and more gringly. But he's Woody Harrelson, so you have to like him regardless, and he's unescapable. And anything he does is going to be fairly good.
Yeah, no, he was good. He was good.
Paul Bettany was very, very good. Although there were moments when he was starting to sound just a little bit like Christopher Walken. he was slipping into that just a smidge.
Yeah, but he certainly at least he did what he did well.
Yes,
and I thought that it took me a while to join the dots on this, Steve. But the actor who played Lando, Donald Glover, is of course the same Donald Glover who's achieved worldwide fame in recent weeks with that viral video about "This Is America," this amazing video shot in a warehouse where he shot being the operative word.
Yes, yes. And that was in his capacity as Childish Gambino.
Yes, that's right. So,
but then I also remember him. I don't know if you ever saw the sitcom Community.
No, was he in that? Okay,
he was, and a very, very, very different character in that. Mm. He is showing himself to have the most astonishing range and breadth and depth.
Yeah.
And he was without doubt the high point of this film.
That's interesting, Steve. I didn't probably, as I was watching it, think he was the standout. I probably wouldn't quite go as far as that, but I do think on reflection he brought some intelligence to his portrayal.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit lacking with Emilia Clarke, and even I think Aaron Reich to a certain extent.
Okay, I can go with that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we probably shouldn't get too serious about this. This is a bit of a fun, it's meant to be a bit of a romp, isn't it? But we deserve some quality, and it's not an awful film by any means. I think most Star Wars fans would go along and enjoy it and enjoy the idea of finding out a bit more of how some of their characters, you know, matured and where some of these key people fitted together. That's all interesting, but it's not Yeah, it's not an A. It's sort of like a C plus or a B minus, something like that, I'd say, for me.
You're saying basically it's a B movie. That's what you're actually saying here.
Oh, is that what I'm saying?
And in many ways, you'd be right, wouldn't you? it's fluff. It's not brilliant. It's perfectly decent. There will be, mark my words, I'll stake what's left of my reputation on it, there will be a Lando Calrissian spin-off next.
Well, look, I think he could probably carry that. You know, he's a talented enough actor.
Yes.
Whether that deserves a whole movie, I don't know. They have to come up with a bloody good story, but look, what the heck?
Well, as somebody did point out, though, I have heard it mentioned that we're reaching the point now where somebody's going to mention that there's a lamp in Luke Skywalker's home on Tatooine in the first film. There'll be a spin-off about that lamp next. That's kind of where we're headed. But yeah, there will be a Lando Calrissian spin-off.
Yeah.
And I don't know it's going to work because he's such a background character. And it's one of the analogy I've used in the past is when, you know, if a pinch of salt makes a dish good, adding a pound of salt make it so much better, right? And I have a horrible feeling that's where we're going to go. But before we wrap up with Solo, can we just mention Phoebe Waller-Bridge?
Okay, we can mention Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
And you have no idea why by the sound of your voice.
No.
Am I being unfair?
Well, I did because I wanted to sort of do a bit of... What's the word?
You like to know what you're talking about.
No. She played L3, the voice of L3.
Correct.
Right? Which is one of the robot characters.
Yeah, she...
But I don't know so much about Phoebe Waller-Bridge, so I think you're going to tell me.
Well, Phoebe Waller-Bridge plays L3, who is the robot sidekick for Calrissian.
Yes.
Yeah. And the actress herself, she came to fame really in Britain in a show called Fleabag.
Okay.
And she was being touted as a possible Doctor Who. She was on that kind of like bookie shortlist.
Right.
For Doctor Who. And I thought that what she did with L3 was lovely. She was unapologetically stroppy and mouthy, and I really, really liked her character.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, she was so good that I found myself trying to recognize the actor's voice. I thought, who is that? You know, who is that voice? Because that's So I agree. I think she was actually a scene stealer.
At times, yes, she was. She was very, very good.
Yeah. Anyway, so overall, hey, it's not going to be. It's a film that will attract a lot of people. I think most people have a bit of fun, but not a very, very high quality. And Steve, if we are going to talk about high quality, let's just wrap this up because there's a out there now on demand. I think it's on Lightbox. Is the second season of a truly high quality drama. I'm talking The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. Oh, yes. This is a challenging watch now, isn't it?
So where I'm up to is I had actually started to watch it when it came out last year, the first season. I got sidetracked by some other things and left it. But on my way back from Norway, I managed to see it on the plane. So I ended up watching the end of all of the first season, and I've seen just the first episode of the second season. I think you might have seen one or two more, perhaps.
I've seen two so far.
Right. So this is an unrelenting, intense, disturbing, dark telling of a world in which they're like Christian fundamentalists, aren't they? Have taken over a huge chunk of the United States and have brought in this terrible way of dealing with women who are fertile, and they're handmaids. There's lots been written about this for a year now. It's a very, very well put together and produced and acted series. From what I've seen of the first episode, Steve, of this new season, I'm not seeing any diminution of the quality yet.
No, I'm going to be a little bit more critical than you.
Okay.
I mean, the production values are astonishing.
Yes.
There's one scene in particular in the first episode involving rain. That's beautifully shot, and the way that the scene is filmed just adds to the oppressive horror of the situation. But that's the problem with it. The first series was set in a very, very horrible situation, and it dealt with dreadful, dreadful problems, but it was focused very much on individuals.
Yeah.
Very, very much. The first two episodes I've seen of season two so far, to me, feel almost like torture porn. They are relentless, and there is relatively little plot development or character development. Something's happening with Offred, June, played by Elizabeth Moss. Something's happening with her, but in particular in the second series, she almost literally goes nowhere.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. So, you're ahead of me in terms of where you've got to. I've just seen that first episode, which certainly, on the face of it, shows her moving to a different environment, let's put it like that. I'll have to take your word for it in terms of the, you know, you've seen more. In terms of the characters, I just wanted to just quickly mention there's some very good performances all around. Elizabeth Moss has won several awards, but one of the characters who I find is captivating, even though she's playing a very unpleasant role, is the actress called Anne Dowd, who plays Aunt Lydia.
Oh, yes.
I find her performance truly great. I think she's found ways of finding some nuances in a character who is a true bad guy. But actually, as is with all these well-done dramas, you see various aspects of the evil characters, don't you? It's not always black and white, and I just found her performance fantastic. But there are many very good performances in it. Oh well, look, I'm still going to carry on with it, Steve.
Me too. Very definitely.
To see where it's going to take us.
But it's heavy going.
It's bloody heavy. It's intense, is what it is.
Yes, it really is. And like I say, that first episode. I mean, if you remember the very, very opening sequence, we shan't dwell on details of it, but the opening scene. In the baseball stadium.
That
reaction from you right then, I think, is what they were looking for, and they clearly got it. It's not an easy watch.
No, it's not. It's not a. But you know what? I've just only just been catching up. But the final episode of the previous season, which allowed us to have a few moments of celebration, sort of, with some of the characters. And some defiance. I really got something out of that. And it topped it off with the, I don't know if you remember, Steve, the final closing credits at the end of the first season. Mm-hmm. They played Tom Petty's American Girl.
Yes.
And I've been listening to quite a bit of Tom Petty lately because I just gone back to him after his recent death. And I just thought that what a wonderfully appropriate song to be used for the character of Offred, and I thought it really struck a chord with me. But anyway, we should perhaps, you know, in a few weeks' time, we might return to this when we've both had a chance to watch all of season two.
Yes,
I think it's worth having another chat about it because it is a hard going but drama, but it is a drama where you'd say this is a quality production.
It is. It's very, very high quality production.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, speaking of it, a few weeks, I think we've yabbered on enough for 1 week.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But that's our job.
It is indeed.
That's what we have to do. Thanks for listening. We are always interested in hearing what you might have to say about the stories. The stories, it sounds like I'm a reporter again. Like the films and the music that we chat about. If you would like to get in touch with us, you're very welcome. You could email us on podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at Crave Podcast.
We are. I'm Simon Mercier.
I'm Steve McCabe.
That's what's been entertaining us this week.
Absolutely.